You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There's that sound. The sound of the start of another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. It is the Saturday edition. I'm your host, Mike Blewett, along with George Kurtz for the next 2 hours. Happy 4th of July weekend. I hope all of you out there are relaxing with some days off and some adult beverages. But more importantly, some fantasy baseball and fantasy football talk. We're really going to turn the page here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, start talking even more football than we've been talking recently. But baseball is still around, you know. In previous stops, George, we seemed to turn the page and ignored baseball. We're not set to do that. We're going to be talking baseball in the first hour and football in the second hour. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing good, Mike. Now, I got a question for you. Is this really July 4th weekend? I mean, you know, some of us have to go to work on Monday. You know, it's a little weird thing here, though.
I know. It's on Tuesday, but I think a lot of people that I know have got the next few days off. Not us, obviously. We do this for a living, but there's plenty of people out there, I think, kicking back onto their summer getaways and summer vacations, and they're taking some time for sure. Not a lot of people in your standard office jobs are working July 3rd. Doesn't mean there aren't people working, but I think a lot of people have just sort of punted that day because there's not going to be a lot getting done.
There'll be a part of the day, but I don't believe state and federal businesses are closed, banks and mail and such.
You may be right about that. So we will work out the we'll make sure everybody has their bank calendars in order by the end of this show.
That's right.
But George, the one thing I wanted to say, we'll take care of it in the next segment as well. Fireworks ensued last night, pun intended, where Alex Wood thought Perella was stealing signs at second base. The managers, there was warnings to both benches because Alex Wood threatened to drill Perella from the Padres. And Dave Roberts and Andy Green got into it. For those that are faint of heart, Dave Roberts used some really flowery language. I can read lips. And he really wanted to challenge Andy Green. Roberts ended up getting ejected. I don't know if Green did a little bit later in the game. I think he might have stayed in for now. No, they both got ejected. That's right, because Mark McGwire was calling the shots by the time I went to bed. Grand slam for Austin Barnes. He had 7 RBIs, but it was overshadowed by this brouhaha.
Yeah, it's really kind of silly. I mean, stealing signs have been going on in baseball since the beginning of time, pretty much. If you don't like what if you don't like what he's doing, change the signs.
Right.
I mean, you're winning the ballgame 4-0 or whatever it was. I mean, you weren't going to lose that game anyway. Roberts is going to get suspended for a while. He broke away from an umpire, sort of pushed the umpire away to get to Andy Green, and then also bumped Andy Green. Roberts will be sitting for a little bit.
You think so?
I imagine we'll hear about that suspension either today. There's no doubt. You pushed the umpire. That alone gets you suspended.
I agree. You know, I think he should see one.
Was he manager as well?
I think he should see one. They've just been a little inconsistent this year, we've seen, with some suspensions. So I think we will see something there for Dave Roberts. George and I will talk about this game and more when we come back after the break. It's the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network for the next 2 hours. Come back and join us. On the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, I'm Mike Blewett, along with George Kurtz. We will be here for the next 2 hours. After that, it's going to be the Fantasy Football Frenzy for a couple hours, and the Weekend Fantasy Update with Joe Galina, Frank Stanfill, and Mike Florio. So feel free to join those guys. Hopefully they're in studio and the AC gets fixed by the time we're rolling around. George, it's hot, which helps my takes because it's about 85 degrees in studio, no AC working right now.
AC's working here.
Yeah, I know it is. I'm sure it is. But in any event, speaking of heat, We were talking before the break about that Dodgers-Padres scenario. The funny part is Andy Green said Perella wasn't stealing signs anyway. So for those of you that didn't see it, Alex Wood basically steps off the mound mid-at-bat, turns to second base where Perella is standing there, accuses him of stealing signs, and said he's going to, quote, drill him. Benches get warned because of that, right?
But do you know how you stop this, Mike?
What? How?
Have a meeting with the catcher. Tell the catcher, listen, do a sign for a curveball. I'm throwing an inside fastball. Guess what? That stops that.
Yeah, it's very easy to change signs. Guys change signs during the year anyway to make sure to ensure this doesn't happen.
You don't even have to change them. Just call for a curveball, throw the inside fastball, have the batter looking out over the plate for a curveball, and then you throw an inside fastball. Guess what? That batter no longer trusts that runner to call signs.
That's right.
And it ends it. You know, it's really silly. You don't need to threaten the other guy. You don't need to start a brouhaha. Just once again, that's all you have to do, and that it's over.
Yeah.
And so it's really silly that it went this far.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Wood seemed to overreact, but, you know, heat of competition. And you know what the funny part is? He admits after the game it was a mistake because it was the first inning. He said it sapped a bunch of energy out because he got all heated and he got out of the moment. Now, he ends up, after Dave Roberts gets ejected, Wood throws six Ks. By the way, he went six innings. I don't think he gave up a run last night. And he's lowered his ERA to 1.83. He's just shy of the innings requirement, so he's technically not leading the league in ERA, but he would be right there if he throws a few more innings. By the next couple of starts, I'm sure he'll qualify. So George, again, lost in that was Wood's great outing. He moves to 9-0 on the season. He's been fantastic, and Austin Barnes, of all guys, has seven RBIs. The Dodgers keep getting contributors from all over the lineup.
So Dodgers good, Padres bad.
That's the long right? of the short of this one. Yeah.
All right. I got it now. Okay, Dodgers good, Padres bad. Dodgers, we're hearing rumors that they're looking for a starting pitcher before a trade deadline. So even with Wood, I think they feel like they have a host of starters. They have more stars than they know what to do with, but they want somebody, I think, upper echelon. Wouldn't be surprised if they get involved in the Jose Quintana sweepstakes.
Well, the White Sox may get what they were looking for all along, with more and more teams seemingly throwing their hat in the ring for Quintana.
It also helps that Quintana has looked like he's faded out over his last three starts.
Right.
He started to look at the Quintana of old, not the I wrote about him and who's hot, who's not. I think he is on the hot list here. And you wonder maybe the first couple of months he was thinking, okay, I mean, you know, got to move, new address. What team am I going to be playing with? That's why he wasn't pitching very well. Not maybe mentally wasn't all there. Now he looks fine again. Looked good against the Yankees on Tuesday night. No runs in, I think, six innings there. And his two starts before that. I think he's only let up two runs in his last 20 innings. So bottom line is Quintana looks good, which is good news for the White Sox. I don't think they're going to get anywhere near the hole they got for Chris Sale, but they're going to get back some nice prospects.
And for fantasy purposes, he's not really a guy. I mean, he's a guy that was obviously widely drafted, widely owned. I don't know that there's too many people out there that got completely frustrated with him and released him. People might have been trying to buy low in a trade, but you probably feel more comfortable if you're a Quintana owner. Obviously, if you're an AL-only owner, you're going to be wringing your hands here for the next month.
Yeah, I was able to claim him in two leagues. He actually was on the waiver wire, which is surprising because people did get upset. You see that, unless the guys – and I don't blame you because maybe I had plenty for releasing. It depends on what kind of league you're in. Maybe you only had four roster spots, you know, with all the DLs. I could see it. And this year, I could definitely see it where players like this are available who are disappointing for a couple of months.
Yeah.
But bottom line is he's figured it out, and he will get traded. That's going to happen. And at least I expect it to happen. And almost any team he goes to, Mike, it's going to be a better pitcher's ballpark. I mean, the White Sox was a guaranteed right field. That's a great hitter's park for lefties and righties. So he even went to the Yankees, where it's, you know, short right field porch, still good against right-handed batters. Fenway's still good against left-handed batters. So he's good no matter where he goes, unless it's Colorado, and I certainly don't expect him to end up there.
Good transition into the Yankees game, which I also watched last night. So I was flipping back and forth between Dodgers, Pods, and then Yanks, Strohs. So I thought, obviously we're both Yankees fans, but I thought going into this weekend – look, they've had a whole bunch of injuries. They obviously haven't played well here for a couple of weeks. The month of June has not been kind to the Yankees, but I thought it was a little bit of a benchmark series. They're going against the best team in the league. how can they compete? Can they stay tough? And last night they showed up big time. They had Lance McCullers going against Mike Pineda. Pineda pitches really well. Brett Gardner hits a grand slam, which is a massive hit in that game. It was still a tight game, and he broke it wide open. So a really nice win for the Yankees last night, and they got some good performances from some guys they needed them from.
Yeah, you know, I was on Twitter last night, and I was tweeting with, I guess, Mark Pace 722, and he had a great, good feeling about the Yankees. Thought they would come out strong this series, and I'm like you, Mike. I was a little worried. The Yankees haven't really played well since that Baltimore series. You know, they've lost two series to the Angels, got swept by Oakland, lost a series to Texas, and then just split a series with the White Sox. We're not talking the best of best teams there. You know, those are series you really can't lose, and they got crushed. So good to see them come out against Houston last night. Lance McCullers started. They made him work, got him out of there at the 5 1/3 innings, and took care of business against the bullpen.
Yeah, that was big. Good to see
the Yankees
getting him out there
right now. Yeah, the Yankees are a mass unit right now. They are extreme. You think the Mets are banged up? Man, the Yankee injuries go on and on forever. And you just go around. I'm wondering if Greg Bird's coming back at all this season. Starlin Castro may not be back after the All-Star break. They lost Gregorius for a month, lost Sanchez for a month. Ellsbury has been out. Hicks is out now. Their top three prospects are all out. And what a devastating injury to Dustin Fowler on
I feel
Thursday
so bad
night.
For that kid.
Think about that. Your it's first awful. Game, first inning, you were going to be up first the next inning. Oh, my God. And you open rupture of your patella tendon.
That's as bad an injury as I've ever heard of in a baseball game.
Were you watching the game, Mike?
I was.
So you saw the injury?
Yes.
So you see him run into the wall, and what was amazing to me is he shows no signs of pain on his face.
None. He just
he's very stoic out there.
Yeah, and he kind of limped it and and then sat down.
Yeah, I don't know what my wife thinks it was adrenaline. That's what was going on because that had to be immensely painful. You ruptured your patella tendon. All right, that had to be immensely painful. So I'm watching him, and I'm like, all right, maybe it's a bruised knee. You know, maybe he hyperextended it. And then when you see Girardi come out there, and see Girardi put the hands to the face, that's when you know, oh, God, this is bad. You know, I was thinking maybe it was an open fracture or something like that, compound fracture. But awful, just awful for the Yankees to lose Wilson. You know, Gleyber Torres is out, and Torres would certainly be up by now. They've called everybody else up.
Clint Frazier coming up today.
Out the entire season. That should be interesting because, like Girardi said last night, that means he has to play every day.
Yeah.
Right? You don't call up this level of prospect to have him, you know, once every now and then. So, yeah, I think Frazier pretty much plays every day, which means is Ellsbury still odd man out? Because Aaron Judge's going to play every day.
Gardner's
going to play more often than not. Gardner's actually not hot. He's actually been very poor. He's I think he was on my who's not list. Gardner's hitting home runs at an incredible pace. By the way, if you want to know why baseball's a juice this year, you can look at Brett Gardner as one of them. He's
homers.
On pace for 30.
15 homers for Gardner.
Yeah, that's psychotic. Yeah, so but does that mean Ellsbury sits? You know, so if you're an Ellsbury owner and Clint Frazier is there, granted, he may not be there long because after the All-Star break, Hicks could be back, Castro will be back, maybe even another Yankee or two will be back. So it's going to be intriguing what's going on in Yankee land for the next couple of weeks.
So anyway, the Yankees put up 13 runs last night. They had 14 hits. Brett Gardner, 3 for 5, 3 runs scored, 6 RBIs. He had the grand slam. You had Gregorius, 2 for 5. Austin Romine, 2 for 5. Ronald Torres, 3 for 3. Chris Carter actually had a big hit last night. He being DFA'd and picked back up all in the same week. He's 2 for 5 with 2 RBIs last night. I mean, think about it. At Lance McCullers last night on a Friday night in the middle of a road trip, they throw out this lineup. Gardner, Ellsbury, Judge, Gregorius, Hedley, Romine, Torres, Wade, Carter. That's a punt lineup for the Yankees. Which they have to field now because of the injuries
lineup.
You just mentioned.
Yeah, it's a spring training lineup. The Yankees are devastated with injuries. To bring back Chris Carter to let you know all you need to know about the Yankees. Yeah. All right, Girardi did not like Carter whatsoever. We all heard the comments he made about him. It's all I have is pretty much what he said when people were asking why Carter was starting. And it is. The Yankees don't have any first baseman in their organization. You know, it was Bird, Austin. Both are hurt. Carter is next. They don't. Miguel Andujar, people are wondering, could he transition to first base? Apparently not.
Okay, so that's it about the Yankees. A lot to talk about there. Obviously, we'll come back. We're going to talk about the Pirates and Mike Fultonevich after the break. Big outing from him last night. Just lost a no-hitter. So it's Mike and George back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Rocking out on a Saturday morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blute and George Kurtz were the Roto Experts in the morning. And hit us up on Twitter today. So I want to get your thoughts on baseball and upcoming football. I know people are starting to do some research for drafts or in full swing with their research. George, we got a couple of drafts coming up. Certainly Scott Fishbowl and our Dynasty League drafts. Those are coming up shortly here. But hit us up on Twitter today, at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. And you can give us a call at 844-843-6879. So moving on to other games last night, the big news. With Mike Foltynewicz, he lost a no-hitter in the ninth, George. Eight innings pitched. He had eight Ks and one earned run. He threw 119 pitches, so they were letting him get after it and try and get that no-hitter, but he lost it with no outs in the ninth, and Jim Johnson picked up his 17th save there.
Yeah, lost a no-hitter, shutout, complete game, all in one shot. Yeah. So I guess that was a shame. But great game by Foltynewicz, once came against Oakland, not exactly the greatest hitting team on the planet. Probably if you're going to name a team that could be no-hit this season, they're top three.
Yeah.
Right there with San Diego would certainly be up there as well. But great stuff, Foltynewicz. Now we need to see if he can build off of it. Because let's face it, he may have thrown a great game last night, but how many people actually started him?
Yeah, it's been so up and down for him, and more downs than ups. It's too difficult to run a guy out there like that every time because it's just too inconsistent.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know we're going to give him starts. Start in, start out from him. Yeah, he has talent. This is the guy the Yankees tried to get from Atlanta in a Brian McCann trade. Didn't work out there. Like I said, hopefully he can build off it. That's what the Braves and fantasy owners are hoping for.
Lost in that is Sonny Gray matched him every bit. He might have even pitched a better game. Ironically, Sonny Gray goes eight innings pitched as well. He only gives up two hits, one walk as to Foltynewicz's four walks. He had four Ks, one earned run in 98 pitches, so he was actually more efficient. But he gave up the run, lost a lead, and the Braves take the game 3-1. It's Sonny Gray. That's a tough luck loss right there. He pitched just as well as a guy that nearly threw a no-hitter.
Yeah, he pitched a gem. I mean, once again, he pitched an absolute gem, and you're right. What do you get for your work? You get an L. Too bad. That's life. You know, every now and then you're going to get outpitched. But he did pitch a great game, a one run in eight innings. Good to see Gray, because he's another guy. He's going to have a new address by the end of the month as well. You know, he'll be traded. Maybe he's the guy that the Dodgers are going to grab. Gray is doing everything he can to get out of Oakland. And I mean that by pitching well. I think the A's will move him. I think they'll especially move him because they don't want to take a chance that he gets hurt again. And then loses all trade value. His value is pretty high right now because there's not going to be too many top-notch starters that are going to be available for competitive teams. You're talking Quintana, Gray, Verlander. After that, not so much.
So obviously there'll be a good market for starting pitching this year. Always is when there's quality starting pitchers out there. But do you think the market will be softer on Gray because of injury history?
You would think. But as I just said, there's not going to be a lot of pitchers out there. So I don't think the price will be the same as Quintana. Quintana is going to get the high price because not only is he a good pitcher, not great, but good, but his contract is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really team-friendly. Verlander is sort of the opposite. He's been up and down this season, and his contract's terrible. So that'd be one of those situations where, you know, the Tigers have to make a choice. Do you want good prospects? Well, that means you're going to eat a good chunk of that salary, maybe half. You know, or do you want to get rid of the contract? Well, in that case, you're not going to get good prospects back. The A's are sort of between that somewhere. The contract for Gray is okay. You know, you're not worried about that. He's pitching well, so you get that. So I think Gray will end up commanding the second highest price as far as prospects, just behind Quintana.
There you go. So moving on to the next game of the night. It was, and I saw a tweet last night as this game was ongoing. It was from Paul Spohr, who we've had on the program. You hit him up on Twitter. I think he's at Spohr, but really good fantasy baseball guy, very knowledgeable. He's like, basically, it was to the effect of how frustrating is Gerrit Cole He goes up against the Giants last night, and he gets bashed. He goes 5 1/3, 10 hits, 7 earned runs. George, he has the 7 strikeouts, but it's all for naught because he dropped a 6-7 on the season. He got tagged by the Giants. Hunter Pence had 5 ribbies, so another rough outing for Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, I think I've said it numerous times. My two most frustrating pitches this season, Gerrit Cole and Joe Ross.
Mm-hmm.
I've been guessing wrong on them constantly. I did not start Cole in my leagues this week, only because I think in the leagues I had a lot of two-start pitches this week, so I was able to leave Cole on the bench. I would have thought he would have done well against San Fran, and he got wrecked. At home, just absolutely wrecked. And what's so disappointing about this, Mike, is this comes after he pitched well in his two-start week last week. So it had looked like he figured it out, you know, that he was becoming more consistent, and then bam, no. So that's disappointing. Cole is another guy who could be on the move this month because the Pirates won't be able to afford him eventually. And this is where you could make an argument his peak value is right now. So this outing certainly hurts those prospects, however.
It's ironic that we're talking about it because we're talking about how frustrated we are with him and how he hasn't been pitching consistently well. And yet the Pirates are trying to get out from under what will be a big contract when the time comes.
Yeah, it's strange. He's still throwing the ball awfully hard. He throws mid-90s. It's not like his velocity is diminished. It hasn't. He's just not locating well, or he's just not focused mentally. Who knows? But it's surprising. Coming off the injury last year, there are some red flags here. So that's the only reason why I wonder if maybe Pittsburgh doesn't trade him, because they may not be able to get the haul they want for him. Maybe they're better off waiting until the offseason where you go with the team where everybody can be involved, not just contending teams. And you find teams that weren't able to make the big free agent signing. You know, they weren't teams where they weren't able to get Quintana or Verlander during this trade deadline. And maybe a team during the offseason that couldn't sign the free agent pitcher. Maybe then you can work out a trade that benefits your team more.
Are you saying injury red flags for Cole?
I understand there are red flags here. He's had injury problems in the past. Why isn't he pitching well this year?
I don't know.
There's something going on here. I mean, like I said, velocity-wise, he's fine. So it's sort of like what was going on with Tanaka. Everyone said there must be something wrong. Well, velocity, Tanaka was up to 96, 97 the other day.
Maybe he's just another Mike Pineda.
The same way.
I don't know.
Could very well be. Maybe he's just inconsistent. Maybe he's not locating the ball well. Can't keep no matter how hard you're throwing, if you're throwing the ball right down the middle, they're going to hit it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, speaking of, Mike Pineda did throw a nice game last night that went unsaid in the previous segment. So we had a tough luck loss for Sonny Gray, but a little bit of a happenstance win for Johnny Cueto, who worked really hard through 114 pitches through 5 innings, gave up 7 hits and 4 walks, but only the 3 earned runs. And because Cole got hammered on the other side, Cueto comes out with a win. He also moves to 6-7, so they have matching records.
Oh, once again, I mean, the starts for Cueto and Gray are the definition of why some people, including myself, would prefer quality starts over wins. I mean, that's really all it is here. That, once again, because Gray deserves something for it. Fantasy-wise, Gray deserves something for his start, right?
No doubt.
Pitched great, instead gets a loss. Cueto pitched lousy.
Yeah, that's a lousy outing.
Anyway, you look at it, it's a lousy outing. Give up, what was it, 4 runs in 5-plus innings. So it didn't save your bullpen, threw a ton of pitches in this in the 5-plus innings. But, you know, Giants exploded offensively, beat up on Gerrit Cole. You get a W.
Yeah. Hunter Pence had 5 RBIs, like I said earlier. Joe Panik, 3-for-5. Denard Span, 4-for-5. Stolen base, RBI. Buster Posey with a hit and a couple of RBIs. Brandon Belt, 2-for-4, 4 RBIs. So they went off on Gerrit Cole and the Pirates last night. One thing I want to mention there is reading an article this morning on the way into the studio about how good Andrew McCutchen has been. He ended his month in the worst way possible. He fouled a ball off of his protective shin guard and ultimately came out of the game, finished the at-bat, I think came out of the game. But he hit .411 in June, his best month since 2012, 6 homers, 23 ribbies, 17 walks to 12 Ks, and his average jumped from, it went up 60 points this month. So Andrew McCutchen, I'm sure you've had him in some sort of who's hot, who's not article, but clearly to say he's one of the best players in baseball in the month of June.
Yeah, I think he's been on both sides of that column this year, as far as who's hot, who's not. McCutchen is another guy, could be on his way out.
Cause trade him now. Jeez.
You know, they can't afford
get rid of him right now. Yeah, he's hitting 411 in the month.
Mike, I'm right on board with it. If you're planning on trading him, which I think Pittsburgh is, and it makes sense because they have, you got Polanco. You know, whatever you think about Polanco, they still have him. Marte will be back in a couple of weeks from his suspension. And then you also got Austin Meadows. So they already have three outfielders. So you can afford to trade McCutchen. If he can bring you back, Pittsburgh's a small market team. They have to do this kind of play this kind of game, just like Tampa does. Kansas City Royals have to play it, where you trade your guys who are going to become free agents who you cannot afford, and you got to keep rebuilding your team. So if trading McCutchen does make sense, and trading him now, not waiting until July 31st, but trading him now while he's hot, while his value may not be any higher, I agree. It makes a whole lot of sense.
It's so funny because we talk about these guys, and you know what? Normally, we don't give players a lot of passes. And you and I are actually kind of understanding of when players are constantly being talked about on the trading block. You can understand how they would get distracted, i.e. Jose Quintana. And somebody like McCutchen, God, it's been a really wild ride for him, for fantasy owners in the last few years, right? You just sort of don't know what you're going to get. Let me ask you this, though. He gets moved. Do you think a change of scenery will be good for him where he can get back to the Andrew McCutchen of old consistently?
I don't know. Because I think it's hard when a superstar gets moved. I mean, and he was a superstar with Pittsburgh, someone who was loved by the Pirates.
Yeah.
He won't be that player anyplace else. He goes... it goes to the Dodgers. He's not the star there. That's Kershaw. That's Bellinger now. So he goes to the Yankees. That's now Sanchez and Aaron Judge. So can he fit there? He won't go to the Yankees. I'm just throwing out other teams out there. So that's what I wonder. Well, if can he handle that? He seems to play much better when he's a center fielder. I don't think he'll be a center fielder for his new team because the metrics say that's not where he plays best. So that's what I'm curious about. Can he make that adjustment to playing, second fiddle, to being part of the machine, not the main cog?
It's a good question. We'll keep an eye on McCutchen and the rest of the Pirates that may be on the move. Come back. We'll talk about how Buck Showalter probably destroyed his office last night. Mike and George back after this. To start, I think the 80s music to get the 4th of July weekend kicked off, which I know started for a lot of people a couple of days ago, but whatever. We're here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Mike and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network until 10, and then it's going to be Fantasy Football Frenzy. That's Corey Parson, the Fantasy Executive, and Matt Modica, I believe. And then it's going to be Weekend Fantasy Update with Joe Galina, Mike Florio, and Frank Stanfield. So good luck there. So, George, I have Brad Brock in the league. Cruising along. Top nine down to the last strike. It's a tight game, so Brock is in there to shut it down. He gets the Rays down to the last strike and then blows the save. Goes to the 10th inning, Rays win, big home run from, I can't remember who hit that home run in the 10th, but in any event.
Souza!
Oh, that's right, Steven Souza. He hit a bomb, three-run homer in the 10th inning. So, Buck Showalter, the look on his face just said everything. He didn't need to say a word. The look on his face, he was just stunned. Angry about the whole thing. He thought he had a win in his hands. Colome, by the way, gets his 21st save kind of out of nowhere. They were down to their last strike, but they pull it out. Snatch victory from the jaws of defeat, and the Rays win 6-4. Brad Brock with the blown save.
Yeah, that didn't work out very well. Listen, Boston, Baltimore's pitching staff, and I mean the staff, not just the relievers, the starting staff's not very good either. They have issues all over the place. This is a team that needs to outslug you, and they're going to lose games like this. Brock, listen, it happens. You blow a save. I'm not really going to get all over him. Britton should be back. I think July 5th is the target date. That's Wednesday for him to come back. If you're a Brad Brock owner, I don't think you should be releasing him right away.
You've seen Britton
try to return before. I know. Right. You want to hold on to him, I think, for at least all of next week and maybe even the week after. I'm not saying you got to put him in your rotation. You have to start him. I'm sorry, staff. Sorry, Scott Engel. You're on your staff, not your rotation. I'm not so sure you want to do that, but at least I think you want to hold on to him for a little bit just to make sure Britton is 100% healthy and ready to pitch well, ready to pitch back-to-back closing opportunities, whatever it might be. I think you want to give that some time. We were burned last time, right? Britton's first time with DL, came back. He released Brock. All of a sudden, Britton's out 2 months. So I think you want to be careful here.
Are you a little surprised that Britton is coming back before the All-Star break, considering how close it is to the actual break? Or you figure they just want to get him some work?
You know, we always hear this question. You know, same thing about a football player coming back before a bye week. You know, should you give him the extra week? You know, some ways, yes. Because if he comes back on Wednesday, I don't know if Baltimore has Thursday off, but at most he can pitch in 5 games. You know, would an extra 5 days off make sense? Plus, to give him an extra 4 for the All-Star break, that's 9. It's almost 10 extra 10 days. Make sure he's completely healthy. Sure. But then the other axiom is, you know what? These guys are paid to play. If the doctor clears him, says he's ready, then yes, he should be in there. I'm probably closer to the yes, he should be in there. It is 5 days. Maybe it was Saturday or Sunday. I might feel differently. But Wednesday, middle of the week, he's going to be able to pitch it. A minimum of 4 games will be available for 4 games. I don't have a problem with this.
So it's a deal. Steven Souza with the big hit in that game. George talked about the pitching being a mess. Tillman actually threw 5 innings last night, only gave up 2 runs, but really that, and his ERA dips below 8. So good for him, George. But that therein lies the problem. He goes 5 innings, and that's like, for him, that's a quality outing because he only gave up 2 runs, but he burned up the bullpen and they blew the game.
Yeah, Tillman has been a softball pitcher this year. Several teams have beaten the snot out of him, and including the Yankees in that one start. Listen, I think at the fact that he still has a rotating spot lets you know how bad Baltimore
is. I was just about – you stole the words right out of my mouth. The fact that he's still in the rotation says all you need to know about the Baltimore Orioles starting pitching staff.
They have issues, right? Put it nicely. Issues, major issues. Abaldo Jimenez did pitch a great game the other night, but that is like a shock. What? Jimenez? It's shocked if Jimenez's last 5 innings, you're shocked. Mullins has a great start. You know, their number one starter, Bundy, okay, he's been solid this year, but there's a lot of worries that he's going to wither and die as the season rolls along. Gausman's been a complete disappointment this year, maybe one of the biggest disappointments in baseball for what we expected of him. And Wade Miley's another softball pitcher. This is a team, if they wanted to contend, probably needs at least 2 starting pitchers, if not 3.
I think you're right about that. Let's see, Longoria, 2 for 5. We talked about Souza. Echevarria 4 for 4 last night. So the big acquisition that the Rays made to get him. So then they have a starting shortstop in there who's hitting .329. He hits 4 hits last night. So good for him. And the Manny Machado update for me, George. I'm stuck with him. You know, that's it. It's a ride or die situation with Manny Machado. He goes 0 for 4 last night. It's .216 OPS of .712. It's all bad news for Manny Machado owners.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? And I feel your pain, Mike. I don't have Machado in any league, but I would have drafted him in the first round of every league if I could have. He just didn't fall to me in any leagues. So I think you said it, ride or die, and that's what you have to do. What are you going to do? Release him? No. You can't trade him because you're going to trade him for, what, 70 cents on the dollar, and you don't want to do that. I guess you could bench him if you have another third baseman, but you know the week you bench him is the week he has 18
hits. Yeah, I can't even bench him. I can't even bench him. He's too good of a player. Like, it's
nope.
I'll do the wrong thing. I'll bench him. I've played him just about every time he's been out there. I can't think of benching him. Honestly, I can't think of benching him on any night that he has started this season. So I've been taking a lot of offers and a .216 batting average. Yes, the 15 homers are there, but same number as Brett Gardner. To George's point earlier, a lot of guys are hitting home runs. There's more guys with 15 to 20 home runs than I've ever seen in my life before the All-Star break.
That's because the ball is juiced. And if it's not juiced, it's certainly been being made better. I think Verlander may have had the most interesting thing about these seams being depressed. And if they are depressed, which means, A, it's harder to get a curveball or anything like that, but it also means the ball will travel further because there'll be less drag. And so I don't want to talk all scientific here. No one wants to hear
that.
Is he being a
paranoid pitcher, though?
Well, I might have thought that, but why are all these home runs happening? Something's going on. All right, I mean, I don't want to get into the steroids here again either. I mean, the players have figured this out again as well. But home runs are up way. I mean, we're hearing this all these stats about home runs. Most home runs never in June. Most home runs are two home runs in a game by a player. It just goes on and on of stuff they can bring out here. Doesn't it seem like everybody has at least double-digit home runs?
Yes.
And if you don't have double-digit home runs, well, then you're not a home run hitter, okay, at all. And like I said, Brett Gardner's on pace for over 30.
Elvis Andrus has 10 homers.
Something's wrong. Right, he was in the Who's Hot list because of that. That's his career high already. 10 home runs by two. I mean, it's getting a little ridiculous here. And listen, baseball's not complaining because the ratings are up across the board.
Yeah.
You know, chicks dig the long ball. Here we go again.
Yeah, June came to a close with a total of 1,101 homers, blowing past the previous record of 1,069 homers set in May of 2000. What was happening back in 2000 with the players? Oh, yeah, I remember that. Five of the top 8 months in history for round trippers have come since the 2015 All-Star break, including this May, which ranked third. So there you go. There you have it. The most homers ever. And that's why it seems like everybody's got a lot of homers, because they do. Denard Spann, Justin Smoke. Easily my worst transaction of the year. I just bailed on Smoke at a time where I needed some position eligibility, and I was like, there's no way he's going to stay this hot, and he continues to hit homers. He hit one off of Doug Fister last night, so enough about that.
I believe his home run set the record, by the way.
Oh, it did? Yeah, so there you go. I think
I believe. ESPN made a big thing of it.
Got it. Yeah, so, Denard Spann tied it. Yeah.
Denard
Spann tied it, and then Smoke broke the record, and then we hit a whole bunch more last night, like another 40 homers last night. In any event, real quick, big news on the closer report front. You had Zach Britton coming back July 5th this Wednesday. Who else out there that we need to know about?
All right, closer report, things are interesting once again at closers, because we're getting close to the trade deadline, right? So we're going to hear more and more news. One thing that wasn't in the closer report is that David Robertson's his wife is late. She's late, but obviously late as far as pregnancy is concerned. Yet she was at the game, I think Thursday night or whatever night it was that Robertson got the save. I thought the same thing. Like, well, maybe you want to be home or at least close to the hospital.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want you to be at the game, but... Yeah. No, me either. I would not be very comfortable with that. So, yes, Brad Brock, we mentioned last day will be July 5th. Other closers that are out there, Cody Allen, he is the closer again for Cleveland. We sort of joked about this last week when Terry Francona said, I want to give Andrew Miller a rest, so he put him in the closer's role. But that seemed to be more because Allen had to leave for the same reason as Robertson will have to leave eventually, paternity leave. Allen's been back in the role but not pitching very well. So maybe that'll change up a little bit as well. Justin Wilson, I expect that Tigers and Mets, by the way, both said they're open for business, going to make some trades. That could lead to Justin Wilson and Addison Reed being dealt. And I don't know if either one will be a closer for their new team.
Doubtful.
So keep that in mind. Listen, I would think so as well. Doubtful, yeah. Cam Bedrosian, good luck here with the Los Angeles Angels. Bedrosian, Street, Norris, I hear, could come back this weekend. I don't know what Socha's going to do. Bedrosian didn't pitch well in the ninth inning the other day. Street, Socha's always seemed to trust. Maybe Norris just gets the job back because he pitched well while Pedroia was out. Either way, I don't trust Socha whatsoever here, so I don't know if I'm going to be touching this at all. Hector Neris in Philadelphia not pitching very well, but has the job for now. St. Louis, one thing I didn't get to write about because it happened after I wrote the column. Seng Hwang Ho, he hasn't lost the job, but it looks like Matheny's going to go with whoever I think can get the job done that night. Rosenthal got a save opportunity on Wednesday after blew a save Monday. Rosenthal didn't pitch well in that game either. Gave up a couple of runs, so it's a mess in St. Louis as well. But if you're looking for saves, you may want to grab Trevor Rosenthal there. Sam Dyson's now closing for San Fran with Mark Melancon on the DL. Texas is a mess. Washington is a mess.
The Nationals signed K-Rod. He's a 7.82 ERA and a 1.66 whip. That says a lot about their bullpen. We'll come back, wrap that up. George and Mike back after this. We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike and George closing out the first hour. In the second hour, we're going to turn the page. We're going to talk some football. We're going to talk to John Laub. He of Football Diehards focuses a lot on college football and rookie rankings and that kind of stuff. So we'll talk to him about some of the incoming players, guys that we've talked about that are not named Leonard Fournette. We'll get a little bit deeper into that. I heard a little bit of discussion with you the other day, George, some of those rookies. So I'll hit you up with some of those questions as well. So just to wrap up the hour, some kind of big injury news from some players. Mike Trout, we saw him clearing a significant hurdle on Friday. He took batting practice, so that's good. Considering the thumb injury, he's able to hold a bat and swing it, George.
Yes, hopefully he'll be back sooner rather than later. I'm going to go off on a different tangent here. I'm listening to the commercials, our own fantasy radio commercials.
Yes.
You know, Mike, I wonder if we're sending subliminal messages. I'm going to try and get myself fired here.
Okay.
I wonder if we're sending subliminal messages here. We have Nando saying, do you want a fantasy owner in the palm of your hand?
Mm-hmm.
Greg Sussman sucking in.
Yeah.
We seem to be sending a message here.
Yeah, it's possible.
I'll leave you with that, Mike.
Yeah, I, for one, love all of our sponsors and would never dare to speak ill of them. But yeah, it's the whistling commercial. It's a weird one. What do you want me to say? One of the producers was feeling goofy one day. He threw that commercial together. It's like, this is going to get people to come back and listen to Florio and Sussman on the Fantasy Best Friends Forever. But Nando's right. Don't be a weirdo. Download the app. Stop listening online. Don't stream it up from your PC or from on your phone through the mobile website. Just go download the app. It's free. Free to download, free to listen. So in that sense, I think we're always sending out subliminal messages for people to listen and pick up fantasy advice. And then Tony Cincotta has a whole other situation going on where he's not even subliminal about it. He's extroverted about it and just tells people weird stuff and brings up weird topics.
You're kidding. Yeah. Tony, really?
Yeah, that's his deal. That's his deal. That's why he's the star of the show, right?
That is his deal.
Yeah.
Tony's out there.
Yeah.
Tony is certainly, what's the saying that Scott would hate? Marches through the
beat of his own drum.
Yeah. Band. Whatever it is.
I'm going to be doing shows.
I think he's up in New York this week.
I'm going to be doing shows. Yeah, I know. I never got a chance to see him, actually. I'll be doing shows with Scott this fall. And by the way, folks, a lot of programming changes coming up here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, but George and I will be here every Saturday for the foreseeable future. We're just going to be doing Roto Experts in the morning every Saturday from here and Sunday. It will change when football season rolls around, but George and I will be here every Saturday and Sunday until football season, and then we'll continue on Saturday through the remainder of the calendar year at least. Real quick, injuries. Matt Adams fouled a ball off his foot. We'll see how he progresses coming out of that. Doesn't look like a DL stint is coming. The Nationals are dealing with Trey Turner's injury, George. He's on the 10-day DL. Danny Duffy, I'm actually surprised about this. I thought it was going to be a lot longer. Now they're saying he could be back on Tuesday.
Yes, I agree with you. I didn't think he'd be back till after the All-Star break as well. He's someone that might surprise you. But then again, he gets two starts this week, or he could get two starts. But that's certainly good news. We're also hearing that, if you need a closer, Familia's just about ready to start I should have mentioned this on the closer report. Familia is about ready to start a throwing program. He can be back by the end of July, early August.
I could probably use that by that time. Charlie Morton scheduled to come back next week. And then Chris Bryant, sore, but doesn't look like a DL stint as well. So some pretty big names in there, and mostly good news. But the Trey Turner thing going to the DL, that's obviously a bad one.
Yeah, I got a fractured wrist getting hit by the pitch. That sucks. And he's probably gone. They haven't said it yet. He'll take another X-ray in about 2 weeks. But odds are you're not going to see him until September.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Hour number two, we're talking football. George Kurtz, Mike Blewett on the Roto Experts in the morning. We'll be back after the break.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Hour number two on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. That sound always kicking off the hour for us here on the Roto Experts in the morning. George and I are happy to have you join us. Listen to the show this morning. Happy 4th of July. We'll be here tomorrow as well. We'll do that again. But For those of you listening today, trying to kick back and relax with the family and friends, barbecues, all that good stuff, enjoy it. You get a little, if hopefully you're off on Monday, you get a little bit of a few days of a break here. So kudos to all of you that are kicking back and relaxing this morning. So, George, we're going to talk a little bit about the NFL this morning. We're going to talk about a Jake Seeley article. I almost said Arrieta. Jake Seeley article that he wrote a little bit later about four guys that he's interested in talking
about. Someone just stole a base.
Yeah. Yeah, might as well talk about that. I didn't get a chance since I wasn't on air a couple of days ago. I think if you're Miguel Montero, you probably need to be more self-aware, 0-for-31 with runners stealing on you. But at the same time, I found it a little off-putting that the Cubs were acting so self-righteous about all of this and saying, "Ah, oh, we don't talk about our teammates like that." Should he not have said anything? Yeah, he probably shouldn't have said anything. But that being said, I found the Cubs to be a little bit self-righteous about the whole situation when a guy lost his job.
Well, listen, it's this simple. If Wilson Contreras had said that same thing, do you think they release him?
No.
No. Of course not. It was a player they could release, a message they could send and not really lose anything. Montero is not any kind of great player. Fantasy-wise, this if you're a Contreras owner, this is good news. Because they've been playing Madden had been playing Montero twice a week, which is really it was hard to understand why he was benching Contreras so much. So this is good news, because now you would think Contreras will play, you know, he'll sit once a week like most normal catchers. So good news there. You said it correctly. If Montero's upset about it, that's fine. You can voice your opinion. Not to the cameras. Not to the media. You keep it in the clubhouse. You talk to your pitcher. You talk to Arrieta. Of course some of the problems are theirs. But you brought up the stat, Mike. It's not all theirs. You know, I think there's another stat that they track from when the ball hits the glove to when you get the ball to the second baseman over third baseman, depending on the steal.
Like bottom
he was
three.
31 out of third. Right. He was terrible. So a lot of it's on him as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to see a guy lose his job like that. I found the Cubs to be acting a little self-righteous, but at the same time, like, what are you talking about your teammate in front of the cameras for? He just looks like you're blaming your teammate for, you know, just ridiculous situation. But that is what it is. As George said, it does help fantasy owners in that Contreras will probably play a little bit more. I assume Madden was trying to keep him healthy for the long haul, the Cubs pushing for possibly defending their title, but they haven't played like that at all.
Cubs better be lucky they have a long haul.
I know.
They're not playing
well.
I
know. They haven't played
there.
Like that at all, but who knows? Maybe that's what Madden was thinking. So there's a whole second half of baseball coming up, George. Giants look great this time last year. So we're going to bring John Lobb back. We're going to talk about NFL rookies, get his thoughts on some of the guys coming into the league. He's from Football Diehards. He'll be back after the break. Mike and George back after this. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for joining us on your July 4th weekend. It's Mike and George. We're here for the next hour. We're bringing in a friend of ours, John Lobb, a guy who listens to our show all the time, and he and I were going back and forth on Twitter earlier this week and discussing some historic fantasy football seasons. I found it to be an interesting conversation. He and I connected and figured he's a great guy to have on the show. He writes for Football Diehards, has been doing so for many seasons, many years. He's John Lobb, the Gridiron Scholar. So please feel free to follow him on Twitter. I'll get the Twitter handle in a second. It is, John, I know you're there, and I know you can give it to me. It is Gridiron Scholar.
Gridiron Scholl.
91. There we go. Gridiron Scholl, S-C-H-O-L, 91. So that's his handle on Twitter. And thanks for joining us, John. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. It's so good to talk to you guys. I've been listening for about 3 or 4 years. I forget exactly when you started coming on, but it's awesome to join you on the new network.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. So you and I were talking about some historic stuff, but I know you do a lot of work with following college football and a lot of players' transitions into the league. There's been a lot said about Leonard Fournette and where he's being drafted. Let's focus on that position first, and the running back position. You've been doing a lot of drafting. I was following a couple of things that you were doing on Twitter with some other players, which I'll ask you about shortly. But other rookies, guys that you're looking to jump on. A lot of people, Matt Modica from our network, talk about Joe Mixon, and he's trying to grab him as often as possible. Outside of Fournette, which running back do you really find a lot of value that's just coming into the league?
So I have been targeting Christian McCaffrey in the third or fourth round of nearly every draft that I've done. I was lucky enough to do three experts drafts with the Football Diehards with their variety of magazines, and I took McCaffrey in all three drafts in the third round. Now, those are PPRs, so I believe McCaffrey has more potential in a PPR league, but I'm bullish on him. I know there's varying opinions, but I believe that the kid can be special. One of the things I loved about him at Stanford is he is incredibly tough between the tackles. This young man was willing to take the ball up the middle. And what I love about him even more, he is a terrific route runner. His father is Ed McCaffrey, the former Bronco. He has special hands. He can run the deep routes, the post patterns. He is great with the ball in the open field. I think he'll get about 1,300 yards from scrimmage. He'll get 50 receptions in PPR leagues. That's incredibly valuable. I think there's upside there. I'm not too worried about Jonathan Stewart. Yes, I understand that Stewart is probably technically at the top of the depth chart right now, but he's nearing the age of 30. He's got a lot of wear and tear. So I'm very bullish on McCaffrey in the Panther system.
All right, John, let's talk about some wide receivers here. I think the running backs – I think rookie running backs generally can do more damage because, let's face it, if you can hit the hole, as long as you can pick up the blitz and not get your quarterback killed, you're going to play. Wide receivers are a little different. Can you get the trust of the quarterback? Can you run the entire route tree? Who is your number? Give me your top three rookie wide receivers coming off the ball and why they are so.
So definitely I love Mike Williams long-term with the San Diego Chargers. I think he came in a very good system, 6'3", 218 pounds coming out of Clemson. I like his long-term ability to be an NFL star, but right now you got a little bit worried. You know, he's had some injuries here, how much of OTAs, he hasn't been on the field a lot, and he's got to learn the system. I do like John Ross a lot. There's clearly injury concerns there. When he was at Washington, and so far he hasn't started because he's still overcoming those injuries with the Bengals. But I think Ross can be a very explosive player. You know, he's a better route runner than DeSean Jackson. You know, his ability to get opened in the red zone is very underrated. He was terrific at getting separation in quick, tight quarters, which I don't think DeSean Jackson is very good at. And we know how fast Ross ran the 40 at the combine. So maybe he's a player who's going to rise in 2 or 3 years. But I still like John Ross at 10. But my third guy that I like, and I don't think getting a lot of discussion right now, is Zay Jones with the Buffalo Bills. You know, Sammy Watkins has not been able to stay on the field. So there's a very good chance that Zay Jones is going to get a lot of opportunities and targets in this Buffalo Bills offense. You know, we know it's not a dynamic passing game, but things can happen with Tyrod Taylor. He's an underrated quarterback. I love Zay Jones' size at 6'2", 201 pounds. You know, he's a crispy, savvy, shifty route runner. I think he's very underrated. I project him at 60 receptions for 670 yards and 5 touchdowns, but I like his long-term ability in Buffalo.
Yeah, we're with John Lobb here. He's from Football Diehards. Catch him on Twitter at GridironSchol, S-C-H-O-L-91. So, John, back to the Mike Williams thing for a second. I really like him a lot. I got a chance to watch him a whole bunch at Clemson. I think he's a great player. What is curious to me is, as you mentioned, he's dealing with some injuries now. He has dealt with them historically. He missed an entire season due to a neck injury, kind of a freak accident, hitting the goalpost a couple of years ago. But beyond that, what's curious to me is, as much as I like the Chargers offense, as much as I could like Williams long term, they picked a rookie wide receiver with an injury history when Keenan Allen is a guy that's been challenged with injuries. I feel like they've put themselves in an odd spot here where two of the guys at the top of the depth chart at that position are injury prone.
I agree with you. I think that's kind of risky for the Chargers. I felt they had other needs they could have addressed. And I'm very bullish on Tyrell Williams. I've been drafting him like crazy this offseason. You know, he had a very good year last year. He ended up over 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns. I love his size and his ability to compete. And like you said, you have 2 injury-prone wide receivers, and Tyrell Williams stayed on the field. I think he's a very sneaky fantasy draft pick this year. I like him a lot.
Now, let me ask you, John, now, if you're starting up a dynasty league, and I think Mike and I both played one that started up last year, and I remember seeing certain people's rankings. They had all their rookies, like Corey Davis might be at round 3, guys, and they were advising you to take guys that low. And I remember thinking, if guys follow these rankings, I'm going to win this league pretty easily because I'm going to draft the guys who are more proven. So how do you go about when you draft in a dynasty league? Are you stocking up on rookies, playing the long game, worried about 3-4 years from now? Or are you worried about winning this year?
No, and I've heard you guys talk about this. I want to win this year. And when I've done my dynasty draft or dynasty ranking, I notice that people definitely let veteran players drop far too deep into their draft. You know, I'd rather dip into the rookie pool later. You know, let everyone go after the big names like Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, and Corey Davis. You know, even though I believe those players are going to be good fantasy values, there's no guarantee for all of us who have played so long. We know that rookies can fall off the table, unfortunately. We've seen it. You know, I'd rather get maybe like a Samaje Perine in round 10, maybe round 9, or maybe a Zay Jones, you know, in round 9. Be comfortable with some rookies that I feel have some upside. I might have to wait 1 or 2 years, but let me scoop up the veteran players, you know, like Isaiah Crowell, a Belial Powell, you know, maybe go at wide receiver, Emmanuel Sanders, Julian Edelman, while other players are taking rookies. I agree with that analysis.
Yeah, plus, John, you bring up an interesting point because, yes, we've all seen rookies that simply don't pan out. So give me the veterans and the guys that I've actually seen produce at this level. Plus, we're talking about winning now. Historically, rookie wide receivers are zeros for fantasy. I'll show you the 2015 wide NFL draft and those first-round wide receivers. Tell me what Breshad Perriman has done and Philip Dorsett and a bunch of other guys and Kevin White. All of these guys, whether through injury or lack of production or they can't get the job, it's really risky, especially in their rookie season. So if you're starting up, even if they're long-term leagues, keep in mind you can get maybe 2 to 3 really good years of production out of a veteran as opposed to your coin flip of the rookie that you think you've scouted that you think is going to come to the forefront. Hell, even Sammy Watkins, as great as he is, it's frustration. And if you had taken a veteran like Larry Fitzgerald a few years ago, you'd be in just as good a position as the guy that's holding Sammy Watkins, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I understand there's, you know, it's the shiny new object, you know, and everyone wants to dip into those rookies and they think they're going to get the next Odell Beckham, you know, 2 years from now. But I agree with you. The reality is that the vast majority of rookies, especially wide receivers in the first round, do not really pan out in the long run. I think we are all spoiled by that class of 2013. You know, that's an historical group of players. That might not happen again for another 14 or 15 years. And I love getting these players who are maybe third or fourth year receivers, you know, maybe a Golden Tate, you know, Devontae Adams. Those guys are so much better that we know of than a Mike Williams or a John Ross. I'll take them instead. I couldn't agree with you more, Mike.
Okay, so we're going to bring John back for another segment. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the rookies and some other things. I know he loves Mike Gillisley. I want to talk to him a little bit about that. So it's John Lobb from Football Diehards at Gridiron Scholar 91. We'll bring him back after the break. Talk a little bit more about fantasy football. Who are you going to draft in the next couple of weeks? Mike, George, and John back after this. Back on the Roto Experts in the morning. It's Mike Luden, George Kurtz, but our guest sticking around for a second segment is John Lobb of the Football Diehards. Catch him on Twitter at Gridiron Scal 91. Does a lot in terms of college football and players transitioning from the NFL and what their fantasy impact will be. So, John, we let off, or I went to the break talking a little bit about Mike Gillisley. I know it's not a rookie, but you were very... You're very high on him. You've been scooping him up wherever you can. It looks like you're getting him about the eighth round in most of your drafts. Tell us why. Is that accurate, A? And B, tell us why you like Mike Gillisley so much.
It is accurate. And, you know, by the time you reach the eighth round, to me, you're looking to take a little bit of risk and hit a home run. I feel very good by that time in the draft. I have my starters, maybe even a key backup at wide receiver, and possibly my tight end. I have Gillisley right now ranked 25th among my rankings. So to me, he's a perfect number three running back. And in the eighth round, to get a piece of that New England Patriots offense, we all believe that they are going to be at least one of the top three, if not the most highest scoring team in the NFL this season. Look at LeGarrette Blount is leaving a massive hole in that backfield. He had 18 touchdowns. There is no way I expect Gillisley to get 18 touchdowns. But when I look at the roster and how many points the Patriots are going to score, I feel really good that Gillisley is going to score about 10 touchdowns and have about 850 rushing yards. Maybe he gets an uptick. Last year he had 9 receptions. Maybe this year he gets to 25. Look, he's 5'11", 219 pounds. He's from Buffalo. The Patriots had scouted him when he was playing up there. I'm not smarter than anyone in the Patriots front office. They've had tremendous success bringing in veteran players, plugging them into their system, and utilizing them. Now, we know that he's going to be scheme-dependent, game-dependent, but I'm willing to take that risk with that type of home run hitter in that offense.
John, what are you going to do with Tampa Bay here? They drafted O.J. Howard. And I don't think they really were planning on drafting Howard, just that the great tight end fell to them, so they felt they had to. Like Corey Parson, I believe Howard will end up being a terrific tight end. But for this year, are you going to trust Howard to be a tight end one? Do you still believe in Cameron Brait, or are you just going to avoid the situation altogether?
Right now, I have not drafted Howard, and I think I've done 12 drafts already. He's not really on my radar. We know how difficult that rookies have transitioning into the NFL. Now, what will get Howard on the field is his ability to block. I mean, look, he came from Alabama. He was coached by Nick Saban and that offensive staff. So you know he's going to be able to lock up some linebackers and maybe even deal with some defensive ends on double teams. So he's going to see the field. However, I'm very concerned about his ability to get open and learn the nuances of the passing game as a rookie in the NFL. So I'm not touching him because we're fantasy fans. We want catches, yards, and touchdowns. Now, he might score 4 or 5 because he's just such a great physical specimen with his height and weight and red zone. If you want to go into Tampa Bay, Cameron Brait is the better deal right now. Look, he's proven that he's been successful. You know, now, while Tampa Bay did not run a lot of two tight end sets last year, I've got to think that they're going to put in some red zone packages where Brait and O.J. Howard are on the field in that, you know, 10-yard line area. That could be a nasty combination. If you're looking for value, I would go with Cameron Brait right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the good news, if you are interested in O.J. Howard, is that you can wait a really long time and pick him up. What I would counter with that, though, is that there are going to be other guys that will be drafted around him that are better options than O.J. Howard would be as a rookie. George, do you agree with that?
Yes, I would go with you there, Mike.
Yeah. John, back to a couple other things I saw in your article here, which, by the way, you can catch John's writing on footballdiehards.com. He did a post-draft ranking. He's just talking about some rookies, and a guy that I've heard us kick his name around on this network, and you wrote a little bit about him, and that's Samaje Perine. Now, the Redskins have a really legitimate offensive line. The problem is that they really skew towards a great pass-blocking line, not as effective in run-blocking. So it's been my contention that no matter who it is, Perine, Kelly, Jones, Keith Marshall, whomever, I don't know that anybody's going to have any kind of a breakout season, but give me some upside for Perine here.
Absolutely. I'm bullish on Perine, and I understand that I'm much higher on him than most people. You can get him in round 9 or 10. I've gone a little bit higher because he's my must-have player this year right now amongst the rookies. And I agree, that offensive line is terrific at pass blocking, but they're at least in the top 10 in run blocking. Now, Pro Football Focus had him like in the top 3. I'm not sure if they're there, but to me, they're clearly in the top 5. What I like about him so much is the Redskins, with the talent they have at wide receiver, I think they're going to spread the formation out in 4 receiver sets, you know, with Jordan Reed. You know, he's that hybrid tight end slash receiver. If you look at what Perine did at Oklahoma, he ran out of a lot of spread offensive formations, and he was incredibly successful at that at Oklahoma. If you give this young man the opportunity to go one-on-one with a linebacker or a secondary member, he has that short area quickness between the tackles. I like that. He can get into the second level. What I looked at closer is the Redskins have averaged 102 rushing yards a game and over 4 yards a carry the last 2 seasons and scored 17 touchdowns. Now, while I don't think Perine will get 102 rushing yards a game, what if he gets 70 at the end of the season average? Look, I have him projected over 900 yards rushing and 8 touchdowns with a few catches. I like him a ton in this offense. You know, they've been successful with Rob Kelly, Matt Jones, Chris Thompson, Keith Marshall. These are not very good running backs. Perine is better than all of the aforementioned guys. I like him this year a lot.
John, all week long, if you've been listening to the Old School Fantasy, Corey, Matt, and I have been, debating Julio Jones and what kind of league you would take Jones in. If you're playing in a high money league, would you still trust Jones in the first round because of the foot injury? Maybe he doesn't play all 16 games, but we love the Atlanta Falcon playoff schedule, weeks 14 to 16. What are your thoughts on Julio Jones? Do you care? Are you taking him no matter what, where you normally would in the first round?
You know, I'm a little bit concerned about Julio Jones. Now, I have him ranked number 3rd overall at wide receivers because I don't know, you know, does he have 1 season left with that foot? That's definitely a factor in it. But I think if you're in your first round and you're at pick like 7 or 8, if he falls, I think you've got to scoop him up. He is not a player I'm targeting. Sometimes, you know, how you're drafted, I seem to be at the very beginning or very ends of the draft. So I haven't had a lot of those picks. 6, 7, 8. So Julio Jones has not been available to me, and I would never take him above 1 of the 3 running backs. But I do look at, I expect him to play probably 13 or 14 games. I still think he's going to be productive, but you do have to worry about Shanahan left. I think that's an underrated aspect of the Falcons. You know, they lost a heartbreaking Super Bowl. I'm not 100% convinced that the Falcons are going to be as productive as they were last year, but I think there is a point where you have to take Jones. But I am not targeting him right now.
So another guy that you wrote about here on the rookie front, we haven't really talked about him too much on this show at least, is Dalvin Cook. Now the Vikings, to their credit, as bad as that offensive line was last year, they went out and they did their best to correct it. Is it going to be totally fixed? No, but they did acquire a couple of guys during free agency to try to help shore up this offensive line. Obviously, you got Latt Murray there, and now you got Dalvin Cook, who fell to the second round. He'll be the running back of the future for them. So any expectations there, or you think he's just going to share the ball too much for him to be any kind of a real fantasy value consistently?
I don't think he'll be a consistent value. I think there's opportunity for Dalvin Cook to be a pretty good asset this year. You know, I think he would be a 3rd running back. I'm trying to look quickly at my rankings right now. Where do I have Dalvin Cook coming into the season? So I have him at number 29. So I think he's a perfect number 3 running back. Latavius Murray, you got to think that he's their goal line guy. But if you're looking for value at rookie running back, Dalvin Cook's fallen pretty low. He's going off the board in PPR leagues at number 28 overall in the 6th round. Dalvin Cook is a good receiver. You know, he's not in the McCaffrey range as a wide receiver, but he's pretty good. You know, I was very disappointed with this combine, and I've been going back and forth with this all the time. I watched a ton of Florida State last year. I had him on my college fantasy football team. When you watch him on film, he never gets caught from behind. He always outruns players, and then he goes to the combine, and you're like, wow, what happened? So maybe he's one of those guys who's a great football player, but he might not have the athletic skills at the combine and the three cone and the 20-yard shuffle that you love. I have him at number 6 right now amongst my rookie prospects. But if you want to get a value, I think Cook could be that guy. I have him projected at 700 yards, 40 receptions, and 6 touchdowns. And I think in the long term, he will have a pretty good NFL career. I do agree. He's not getting talked about a lot. So if you do like value and he slips to that 8th round, I think you could do much worse than drafting Dalvin Cook this season.
I think he's a guy I'll be targeting in one of my dynasty leagues because I draft a little bit lower, and I think he might slip down a little bit, although running backs are gold in dynasty leagues. So, John, appreciate it. Good stuff. That's John Lobb from Football Diehards, at GridironSkull91 on Twitter. George and I will be back for the next 20 minutes on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Come back and join us. Back digesting a lot there, a lot of fantasy football talk there with John Lobb. He's great. Talked a bit about some rookies, Julio Jones thing. Hey, George, you got me all nervous about Julio Jones now. He was a guy I drafted in our dynasty league. I don't want to think about. I mean, I always knew about the foot injury, but
listen, it's not me. This is Corey really. Carson was all worried about Julio Jones and
freaking me out.
We had a conversation yesterday about it. About how, well, Corey would not take Julio Jones if he was playing in a $250 league, fine. But at a $500 and above league, he's not taking Julio Jones. And I don't understand that. I treat every league the same. You know, if I'm going to take Julio Jones in a $1,000 league, I'm certainly going to take him in a $250 league. I go by my rankings. My rankings are my rankings, especially in the first round. You know, first 4 to 6 rounds, I'm generally a BPA guy. After that, I could switch things up depending on team needs and maybe wanting to spread the risk out a little bit. If I'm drafting 12, 15 teams, maybe I don't want to have the same guy in 8 teams.
You know,
then I might take a different guy off my rankings just to separate things a little bit.
Yeah, and you had, but I guess I'll ask you this: similar to how our colleague Matt Modica kind of spread the wealth when he had number 1 overall picks in baseball, where he took Trout in one and Kershaw in the other. If you have a similar slot, are you going strict rankings, or can you spread it out and just sort of mitigate the risk by taking, I don't know, Julio Jones in one draft and Odell in the other, for example, if you have a similar pick because they're ranked so closely?
First round is the first round. All right? It's the only round where I can tell you before we draft who I'm I'm going right in that order. You know, if I have 12 picks, whatever it might be, I always map out my first round, and I'm going to follow that. Now, listen, if I'm in 12 drafts and I happen to get the fifth pick in 9 of them, okay, I'm probably not going to have Odell Beckham in all 9. Yeah. That may be one say, okay, maybe I do switch it up a little bit, and I'll go half one guy, half the other, just because I want some variety here. But, Jelly, don't you have to trust your rankings? I understand if it's tied. You know, like I said, maybe you have, Evans and Beckham tied. You know, so then I could see it. Okay, you split it up. But if I have them ranked in a certain way, it means I believe that ranking. So why would I take a lesser player? You know, I don't get that. That's why my first call, flex at 4 to 6 rounds, I'm just going by my rankings. After that, okay, team need comes into it. You know, my first 4 to 6 rounds, maybe the rankings kept coming up wide receiver, and I already have 4 and I have 1 running back. You know, or whatever it might be. So then I may have to change things around a little bit to as far as roster construction. But other than that, I want the best player I have that I think is available, right? I don't care where my points come from as long as I get my points.
Totally understand. I'm just a little freaked out about the Julio Jones thing, so just thought it was a good discussion. Anyway.
Good. Glad I can help.
Yeah, thank you, George. You've assuaged my fears somewhat. In any event, Jake Seeley came out with an article this morning, and I want to tell everybody to celebrate our 4th of July promotion in declaring your independence from losing. I'm here to give you the top fantasy Jake's here to give you the top fantasy football players that will break you free from the possibility of defeat. So for the promotion, listen to this. Use code 40 for 4. That's 40, F-O-R, the number 4. 40 for 4 will get you 40% off the exclusive Edge package, which is good for the draft package and the full NFL season. It includes rankings, predictions. George has stuff in the draft package. I have stuff in the draft package regarding offensive lines. You're going to get cheat sheet generators, all that kind of stuff. So use the code 40 for 4 to get you 40% off the exclusive Edge package. It's a special 4th of July promotion. It's available now until a date yet to be determined, possibly. So go in there, get the exclusive Edge package. You're probably not going to get a better deal on it for the rest of the year. So let's get those out there and make sure you sign up and just start reaping the benefits of the exclusive Edge package. Anyway. On fantasy football draft day, Jake wanted to highlight a few players that can help you prevent a losing season. The first guy he talks about, George, is Tyrod Taylor. He said an interesting thing happens when you study Taylor's season-long and weekly performances. He was actually one of the most consistent quarterbacks in fantasy football and worthy of being a QB1. He had the second highest percentage of games with 15-plus points at 85, nearly 86%, sitting only behind Aaron Rodgers. So your thoughts about Tyrod Taylor, and if you think Jake's spot on in declaring him a lockdown QB1.
A lockdown QB1. Now, I think when Jake says something, you do need to pay attention. He's very good at this rankings. He's been with the Fantasy Pros, one of the top rankers the past couple of years. So you do need to pay attention. But for me, quarterback is this simple. I'm waiting forever. I'm not going to take a quarterback in round 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, probably not 9 either. The quarterback is so deep. I guess bottom line is if I end up with Taylor as my number one, I'm fine. I'm not worried about it. I think I have Taylor at 16 right now. You know, but that, I think that's for me, that's telling you how deep quarterback is, because I think from 13 through 17 is a mishmash. You know, at 12, I have Stafford, 11, Newton, 10, Carr. I mean, you want to put Taylor in there. Who am I taking out? Mariota, Wilson, Winston, Cousins, Luck, Ryan, Brady, Breeze, Rogers. Quarterback is so deep. The other guys I have outside of my top 12 would be Manning, Roethlisberger, Rivers, Prescott. You know, so quarterback is just loaded this season. It's really why I think you need to play in a super flex league to get two quarterbacks in there. But as far as Taylor's concerned, I agree with Jake. I think Taylor's going to be very good. My only worry would be if Watkins does get hurt. You know, then that's sort of, there's no Robert Woods this year. Would that be a lot to be put on Zay Jones? Clay is also banged up. That's really my only, my worry is not Taylor. It's what's around him, the passing weapons.
Yeah, Taylor, currently according to Fantasy Pros, which aggregates the rankings of all the top experts in fantasy football, he currently sits at 16, right in front of Andy Dalton, right behind Matt Stafford. You know, if I'm in a league and he's the 16th quarterback off the board, I'm going to feel really good about getting him. George and I have been banging this drum since we started talking about football. Just wait on your quarterback, and if you end up with Tyrod Taylor, I think you're going to be okay. I have to say that I don't quite like him as much as Jake might or some others might, but it doesn't mean I'm going to be upset if I end up with him, especially, you know, I'm not in any – I'm in very few 16-team leagues that are redraft leagues, so, you know, Tyrod Taylor, hell, you'd probably be waiting all the way near the end of your 12-team, 16-round draft in order to take somebody like that. So, in that sense, you'd get a tremendous value. Next guy he has, we actually were just talking about. He really likes Dalvin Cook, and he said he could have easily picked Jamal Williams, and he would have said, all right, Jake, you've talked enough about Jamal Williams already. Anyway, he thinks Jamal Williams is this year's Jordan Howard. But beyond that, he goes into why did the Vikings sign Latavius Murray? And he just felt like they needed to address the position before they headed into the draft, which they were still evaluating. And once he was there, the Vikings pounded it. He thinks Murray's a volume runner, but that Cook is really going to be the guy who will be the starter by year's end, if not going into it. So he's got RB1 potential, at worst a solid RB2. So that's even higher praise than John Lobb was giving him.
I think it's interesting there. I mean, when you say that, you know, Murray signed, I mean, that'd be the reason why you'd like to see that maybe the draft be a little earlier and free agency come after the draft, then you fill in your needs there. But Minnesota had to sign Murray. They needed a running back there. And then maybe Dalvin Cook fell to them in the draft, and they went best player available in the draft, which I don't mind at all. In this day and age, most teams like to have two very solid running backs anyway, so this doesn't bother me. I have Cooks ranked as my number 21, so I have him as ranked as a low-end running back too. I do think there's room to move up here. I do. But I also worry about a couple of things here. One, the offensive line is still poor. It's not pathetic like it was last year, but it's certainly not. I don't even think it's average yet. So there's going to be some problems there. Bradford still needs to throw the ball into the secondary. If he's not going to throw the ball into the secondary, then those safeties are going to creep closer and closer to the line of scrimmage. And I still think this team wants to win games on defense, which means they're going to want to win games 17-14, 20-17. They're not going to open things up, which means I just don't know how much running room is going to be there for Cook. So I like the back. I would like him better on a different team. So I have my worries there for him. Dynasty leagues, we talked about, I think you said it perfectly, running backs fly off the board in dynasty leagues. So he's going to get drafted very early there.
I think I have the 11th pick, and I won't get him. I think I have the 11th pick. I won't get Cook.
Oh, no, I have a 12th pick. I have no chance in hell, and I know that.
Yeah.
You know, and I have three picks in the first round. I think I have 12, 15, 16. I'm going to have to trade up to try and get someone like him, and I wonder if it's going to cost me the 12, the 15, and I don't know, another second-round pick to get a chance at maybe if he lasts another 6 overall, 8 overall, and I don't even think that'll be enough because I think he might go top 5. It wouldn't shock me.
Yeah.
So bottom line is I do like Cook, but I have him as a low-end running back too right now, but I think there is some room for upside there.
So one thing I'll say about the offensive line since I wrote about it, George is right, still poor. It's not quite as bad. Now, I have him ranked number 26th. They have a chance to improve on that, obviously. Just not much where to go but up. Now, they made the biggest possible signing they could make, the most coveted left tackle free agent that there was in Riley Reiff. They're stolen from Detroit. They brought in Mike Remmers, who was terrible at Carolina last year. So, yes, they brought in a couple of guys. One of them was really bad. Alex Boone and Nick Easton are guys there. Joe Berger's their center. He's their most solid guy other than Reiff. But, you know, these guys haven't played together, all of them. So we're going to see exactly what happens here for Minnesota with Dalvin Cook. I do think there's potential there. I'm probably more with you. Here's the reality with Dalvin Cook, George. There's a story. You know how these stories start to spin themselves? And like, his combine was a little disappointing. And from what I heard, he fell because people maybe didn't love some of the off-the-field stuff. If you watched him play at Florida State, he was awesome. Just as good as McCaffrey in some instances, although I would have McCaffrey and Fournette in front of him every time based on their college careers. Cook's skill set is going to be great for the NFL. Can he keep it together? Can the offensive line keep it together? That's what we're going to need to know about Cook, right?
Absolutely. If you can't open up holes, there's no place to run for him. Like I said, I would love him a lot more on a different team.
I think you're right. I think that's a perfect way to put it. But he's going to take Lat Murray's job before too long, if not from week one. George and I come back and wrap up the show after this. Thanks for joining us on this July 4th weekend on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. George and I closing it out here in this segment. Coming up is Fantasy Football Frenzy. That's Corey Parson, the fantasy executive, and Matt Modica. After that, it's going to be Weekend Fantasy Update with Joe Galina and Frank Stanfill and Mike Florio. And then it will be the NASCAR Father and Son Fantasy Hour. It's NASCAR focused with Scott and Sean Engel. So please feel free to listen to that. As I was saying earlier, please go to rotoexperts.com. You're going to get the best deal of the summer on the exclusive Edge package. Entering code 40 for 4, that's 40, F-O-R-4, will get you 40% off the exclusive Edge package. We're just talking about Jake Seeley's article right now. As George said in the previous segment, Jake's excellent when it comes to rankings. I would trust him as much as I trust anybody in the entire industry when it comes to rankings. Doesn't mean I can't disagree with him, but I do trust him quite a bit in both baseball and football. So we talked a little bit about Dalvin Cook there. Two things on the Packers before we get out of here. Are you buying the hype that Jake is selling regarding Jamal Williams at the running back position for the Packers?
You know, Mike, I'm not going to draft him as an RB1 or RB2, but as I like to keep saying, if I'm going with an RB0 strategy and I'm going all heavy on wide receivers, I don't do that on purpose, but some drafts work out that way because they're just, the wide receivers are better value when I go. Then Jamal Williams is someone I'm looking to grab because I'm going to look to grab running backs who aren't going to be highly owned or aren't going to be drafted early but could break out. I think Williams is one of those guys. I don't trust Ty Montgomery. You know, so maybe it will be Williams that breaks out there. It's risky. Of course it's risky. But, yes, I am interested. And, Mike, I got a question for you going a little off topic here.
Sure.
Do you know what day today is?
Today is July 1st. Canada Day?
No, it's not. Well, it very well might be. I have no idea. I don't live in Canada.
I think it's Canada Day.
It's happy Bobby Bonilla Day.
He got his check. Yeah, he gets his $1 million check. They're still paying him for another
1.19 million. Don't shortchange the man.
I think he's
don't wipe that smile off his face.
Oh man, I usually text my Mets fans friends every year around this time, and I'll be doing that after the show on the train on the way home. So good for Bobby Bonilla.
From now until 2035.
35. It's a nice annuity, right
35.
There.
35. What were the Mets thinking? What were they thinking? I mean, my God.
It's not the only deferred contract, but, you know, they're trying to save a little bit.
This has been going on forever, though. He retired 20 years ago.
I know. It's great. Look, who's better than him? Well, actually, a couple of NBA guys are better
than
him.
Happy Bobby Bonilla Day, everybody.
Jeff Teague signed a $60 million contract last night. He's like below the mid-tier point guards in the NBA. And Steph Curry made $200 million last night, so he's doing pretty well. So don't get me started on the NBA stuff.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a pretty good.
I could live on that.
Yeah, I could too. And now
I'd scratch by.
Yeah, Russell Westbrook's going to get the same deal. So good for him. Last thing, Davante Adams. You in on Davante Adams this year? Where he's been drafted.
But the every other year thing does bother me. But I'm in. I have him as a mid-range wide receiver too. Passing offense, Aaron Rodgers going to throw the ball over the place. Nelson being back at full strength, I think really only helps. I do worry, though. I think Nelson Cobb? I do think Randall Cobb will be much better than he was last season, so that will take some of the targets away. But I love the Packers passing offense. I'm in love with it.
Yeah. Rodgers is going to light it up. Not that you need to draft him first guy off the board, but he is going to light it up. Jake also writes about Eric Ebron in here, and I'm not going to be in on Ebron. Jake raises some interesting points, but the reality is if you just say this every year about Eric Ebron, you're bound to be right. I'm not saying Jake did that, but somebody's bound to be right about him at some point. So that says everything.
I wait on Berman for a tight end, so I'll be in on Ebron.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, folks. George and I will be back tomorrow. Have a great 4th of July weekend, but we'll talk to you tomorrow. Peace.